The Bible reading for today comes from 2 Samuel chapter 7, verse 8 to 16. So I'll give you a moment to get that on your Bibles, or you can read with me on the screen. Now then, tell my servant David, this is what the Lord Almighty says. I took you from the pasture, from attending the flock, and anointed you ruler over my people Israel. I have been with you wherever you have gone, and I have cut off all your enemies from before you. Now I will make your name great, like the names of the greatest men on earth, and I will provide a place for my people Israel, and will plant them so that they can have a home of their own and no longer be disturbed. Wicked people will not oppress them any more, as they did at the beginning and have done ever since the time I anointed leaders over my people Israel. I will also give you rest from all your enemies. The Lord declares to you that the Lord himself will establish a house for you. When your days are over and you rest with your ancestors, I will raise up your offspring to succeed you, your own flesh and blood, and I will establish his kingdom. He is the one who will build a house for my name, and I will establish the throne of his kingdom forever. I will be his father, and he will be my son. When he does wrong, I will punish him with a rod wielded by men, with floggings inflicted by human hands. But my love will never be taken away from him, as I took it away from Saul, whom I removed from before you. Your house and your kingdom will endure forever before me. Your throne will be established forever.
I'd better get into it because it sounds like I'm on the clock today. Okay. My question to start the message this morning for you is, have you ever had an experience where you've had high expectations for something only to have reality turn out to be kind of disappointing? I'm sure we've all been in that kind of situation many times. Most people have probably had the experience of going to a restaurant, especially for fast food, and ordering a burger or something. And on the menu, it looks just amazing. But, you know, when you get your order and it's on your plate and you look at what you've got, it's, you know, not quite what you'd hoped it would be. Or if you do a lot of online shopping, then you probably know this experience very well. Like perhaps the dress that you bought doesn't quite fit you the way it did the model on the website. Or when you get an item which you ordered from eBay and you take it from the mail and you feel like, well, maybe the seller has a bit of a different definition for the term slightly used than you do. In my personal experience, the best example I can think of where this happened to me was in 2015. So I was in high school back then, and at the time I was really looking forward to watching the new James Bond movie. It's 10 years old now, but at the time it was new. Now, I had a bit of a movies phase in my teenage years, and so I and a group of my friends were really excited for this movie. We'd been following the news about it in the year leading up to its release, and we were going to watch it together at the cinema on the opening weekend. And I had really high expectations for it. Now, the previous movie in the series was amazing, and this one was being made by one of my favorite movie directors. One of my favorite actors had been cast as the main antagonist, and the kicker was that the trailer looked amazing. It was full of action and suspense, and I couldn't wait. But when I actually went and watched it, I just thought it was a total train wreck. I mean, the plot had more holes than a colander. And there was barely any respect given to the movies that came before it in the series. The ending was a total anticlimax. The actor I liked got barely any screen time, and there were pretty much no action scenes in the whole movie, aside from the ones that I'd already seen in the trailer. Now, I'm sure that everyone can tell a story of their own that's just like that, where reality doesn't quite meet our expectations. And there are all kinds of things in this life that promise to be something great that ultimately just seem to let us down. Now, our Bible passage today in 2 Samuel chapter 7 is a passage that I think gives us some high expectations for something incredible. It's a message from God promising the newly crowned King David of Israel some amazing things for his kingdom. And so this morning I want to ask the question, does reality actually match up with the promises we see here, with the great expectations that God gives to David, to Israel, and to us. Well, before we look at God's promises, let me quickly set the scene of the passage. So after a long and hard journey, God had led David from being just a shepherd boy, and he had brought him and placed him on the throne as the king of all Israel. Now, I imagine that David might have thought that after he had finally been crowned king and Israel was at peace, that God's plan for him was done. You know, like in movies or in books, when all the characters seem to have found their happy ending, it seems like it's about to wrap up. But God's story for him was far from done. It's not the end of the story, it's only the beginning. And so it was at this moment that God says, David, I'm not done with you yet. I'm not done with my people yet. And so if we imagine that David was maybe a business owner, then we might say that God is telling David that he wasn't just going to start a business. No, he was going to go on to lead a globally recognized brand with some skyrocketing profits. Now, making it to the throne was just the beginning. And so we see halfway through verse 9 in our passage that God stops talking about the past and the present, and then he begins to make some promises, looking to the future he has planned for David and his people Israel. Now, here's where we can work out the terms of God's promise and what our expectations should be for what is to come by looking out for the word will. He says, I will make your name great. I will provide a place for my people Israel. I will plant them so that they can have a home of their own. Wicked people will not oppress them anymore, and I will give you rest from all your enemies. Now, if we can summarize these promises from up to the first half of verse 11, God promises that while David is king, that he and Israel will be known as great. They will have a secure homeland, and their enemies will no longer attack or oppress them. Now, I think something else to notice here is that God is saying that he himself will be the one to do all the work. Just like in verses 8 and 9, where God reminds David that he was the one who made David king. It wasn't David himself, it wasn't his army, but it was God alone. And so in this case as well, it will be God who will be the one to make David's kingdom great. And so this should be then a promise that David can count on, because God himself says that he will make it come true. Now, these promises so far are actually not really new promises for Israel. Now, if you were around our church last year while we were preaching through the story of Abraham, or maybe you're just familiar with his story yourself, then you might remember how God made promises that sounded just like these to Abraham back in Genesis. So here, God is telling David, first of all, that those promises are not yet truly fulfilled. And secondly, that he is now, in fact, a part of God's plan to finally bring them into a full reality. And what an amazing honor that is for him. What high hopes we should have hearing God make these promises about Israel's future. But as we already know, God still isn't done. Now, I actually think we can see two separate categories of promise we can identify in this passage. And this is the first. These promises are to do with Israel. But from the second half of verse 11, the rest of God's promises are mainly about David's son, who would become king after him. So let's look again for the word will in the passage and work out what these promises are about. The Lord himself will establish a house for you. I will raise up your offspring to succeed you. I will establish his kingdom. He will build a house for my name. I will establish the throne of his kingdom forever. I will be his father, and he will be my son. When he does wrong, I will punish him with a rod wielded by men. But my love will never be taken away from him. Your house and your kingdom will endure forever before me. Your throne will be established forever. So that's a fair bit to look at here. So let me again summarize all those promises for us. I think all up we see five relatively unique ideas from this section. Number one being that David's son will succeed his throne after him. So this is clearly from verse 12, but it's actually also what God means when he says in verse 11 that he will establish a house for David. In fact, God is using a bit of wordplay here. So if you go back from our passage to the beginning of chapter 7, then you'll read that this message from God actually stems from David wanting to build a house for God. David was sitting in his own very grand, very fancy house, his royal palace, as a new king. And he decides that he shouldn't be the only one who gets, you know, this fancy house, that God should have one too. He wants to build a temple for the Ark of the Covenant. But God told David not to do that. And so in our passage, we see that David isn't going to be the one to build God a house, but God is going to build a house for David. But unlike David, God isn't talking about a building. Remember, David already had a great palace. What, he wouldn't need another one. And besides, God isn't really all that interested in buildings. No, a house here means a family. In particular, a royal dynasty. Now, we still talk about royal lines as a house today. If you didn't know, the royal family in England is known as the House of Windsor. And this is the kind of house that God will make for David, a royal line in the House of David, so that not only would his son take after him, but that his son's son would then take after him, and then etc., etc. Now, this leads us to the second promise that we see here. Number two, that his kingdom will last forever. Not just for a long time, but forever. And now that is a big promise. But it only gets bigger because in point three, we see that the relationship between God and king will be as father and son, which is also amazing to think about. You're imagining that God himself says he will be like a father to your son. It already sounds pretty good, to be honest, to think that your dad is the king, but then to go to the next level, God himself as your father. Except the next promise is maybe a little less optimistic, because it says when he does wrong, God will punish him. Notice the when, not if, but when. And now this sounds maybe not very hopeful, but actually, in a way, I think it makes the other promises we've talked about even more amazing. Because even though that God knows that this king will mess up, he will still appoint him as king. And his throne will still stand forever, and he will still treat him as his very own son. Now, one last promise to point out is actually not about what God will do this time, but about what David's son will do. He will build a house for God's name. And so that's one more reason God told David not to go ahead with his construction plans from the beginning of chapter 7, because it was God's plan that his son would be the one who would do it instead. And so now we have all of our promises to review. Two categories, one set of promises about Israel's future and another set of promises about a future king. David's son and his descendants. Now, we have our expectations now for the future. And I have to say that reading these lists, I think that our expectations should be pretty high. To refer to my example earlier, if this were a trailer for a movie, then I'm expecting a real critical success and a box office hit. We have a preview of the future which promises some truly incredible things. But really, we're not watching a trailer for a movie that's coming out in theaters sometime in the future. No, we're actually reading a book that's thousands of years old. And so the movie, for us, is already out. You know, it's all recorded here in the Bible. And so we're actually able to keep reading and put all of these promises to the test. Do they come true? Yes or no? And also, does the reality of what actually happened with David and his son meet our expectations for them? So let's review the first category of promises about Israel first. If we read the rest of the book of 2 Samuel after our passage, then we see that David and Israel during his reign indeed were considered to be great. David would go on to be remembered as the greatest king in Israel's history, and his reign would be looked back on as the ultimate standard of the kingdom of Israel. In fact, if you read 1 and 2 Kings, you'll see that every other king after David would have the standard of their reign measured against David's. And so he was the benchmark for making a good king. And while David was king, there were no attacks on his homeland from enemies outside of the country. And Israel held onto its land. Their borders remained secure, just as God promised. But David was far from perfect. After our passage this morning in chapter 7 of 2 Samuel, there are still 17 more chapters in the rest of the book. And most of them are accounts of horrible mistakes and sins which David committed and the consequences that he and his country faced because of them. One example is a conflict that David had with one of his sons, which sparked into a full-blown civil war. And so while it's true that Israel wasn't attacked by their enemies while David reigned, instead they just kept it in the family, I guess. So if I'm looking at these promises about Israel and the expectation of a utopic paradise kingdom famous for its greatness, its safety, and its security, I have to say that while you can definitely say that they were all technically true in some way, the reality of how they came true is honestly a bit of a letdown. I've got the burger I ordered, but it looks nothing like the picture on the menu. So what gives, God? Is this really the plan you had in mind when you made these promises? Well, let's hold that thought for a moment, because maybe David's reign was just step one of the plan on the way to a true and better fulfillment that would actually meet all our high expectations. Because now we have our second category of promises to review about David's son. So first of all, David's son did in fact take the throne after him. So it was officially a Davidic dynasty. After 2 Samuel, the books of 1 and 2 Kings go on to tell the story of the Davidic era of kings. And David's son Solomon was the first king of Israel after David. King Solomon's reign started off really well. He became famous around the world as the wisest man who ever lived. And Solomon did indeed go on to build a house for God, a temple for the Lord. And when he did this, God himself reminded Solomon of all the promises that he made to his father David about the blessings that he would give to him, especially promise two. And at that point, things looked like, well, maybe all the high expectations with God's promises gave would truly lead to a reality that would satisfy them. But God also reminded Solomon of one other thing, which is promise point number 4 of our list. If he disobeyed God, then there would be punishment for his actions. And sure enough, just as God predicted, despite his strong start, Solomon would go on to mess things up horribly. Now, Solomon was famously wise. He was extremely wealthy and therefore extremely popular with the ladies, specifically with foreign princesses. Solomon had 700 wives and 300 concubines. Now, many of them would have been political marriages, but a big problem that came out of this was that for every foreign wife he took, he would also bring in with them their foreign gods and idols. And he even built temples for them, which compromises point 5 of our prophetic promises a little bit, don't you think? You know, he did build a house for God, but he also built possibly hundreds of other houses for other false gods as well. And so God delivered on his promise that he would bring punishment and discipline to him, and enemies came up against Israel once again. Now, Solomon's reign was mostly peaceful, but in the end, he turned away from God, and so God removed the peace from him that he'd given to David. And when Solomon died, which, by the way, might conflict a little bit with promise 2 You know, you can't be the king forever if you die. But we did expect this would happen because we're expecting an extended house from David after all. And so his son did in fact succeed him and the Davidic line continued. But Solomon's son was a very foolish king. And because of his foolishness, he lost control of 10 out of Israel's 12 tribes. Now, just a reminder that this is only David's grandson, which means we've barely made it two generations into the Davidic line, and only about 15% of his kingdom is left. But I thought the kingdom was meant to last forever, except now there's barely anything of it left. But okay, you know, technically a descendant of David stayed on the throne. And there were indeed many more kings from his family after this. But most of them were disobedient against God. And even the few good kings there were still suffered from attacks and war with their enemies. Throughout all of the books of 1 and 2 Kings, we never really see any kingdom like there was at the peak of the rule of David. And eventually, after many generations, at the end of 2 Kings, we read that the kingdom fell. They were captured by their enemies. The people of Israel were taken out of their country and forced to live in exile. They could no longer exist as an independent kingdom. And what about the house for God, the temple which Solomon built? Well, when the kingdom was captured and the people were taken into exile, it ended up being completely destroyed. So, does reality meet our lofty expectations according to God's promises? Let's have a look at our checklist. David's son did take the throne after him, but did the kingdom last forever? No. I guess you could say technically it continued for a long time, but we already said a long time is not the same thing as forever. Did God and the king have a relationship like a father and a son? Well, maybe, except the son was almost always in some kind of extreme rebellious phase. God was there the whole time, though, despite how many of the kings ignored him. Well, we can certainly say that he kept one promise up to expectations, and that is that he made sure to discipline those kings who went astray, raising up their enemies against them, which in the process ended up breaking all of our hopes from the promises of Category 1. So, if we were hoping that the promises from the first category might be better fulfilled by a future son of David than they were by David himself, I think I can safely say that we should be pretty disappointed with how things turned out. Our expectations have been once again let down by reality. You can look through the story yourself of every one of Israel's kings descended from David. None of them seem to live up to the standards that God himself promised we would see. Well, you know, at least they were all kind of partly true, right? Or at least for a while they were true. You know, if these are the things that you're thinking, then I can't really blame you. But this isn't the end of the story just yet. Remember how at the beginning of our story in 2 Samuel 7, David seemed to think that God's plans were over because it felt like he'd reached a happy ending. Except God said that he had something bigger still planned. And now, after following the line of kings down after David, it feels like the story's over for a different reason, not because of a happy ending, but because of how hopeless it seems. But God still has a plan for a son of David who would come and meet every expectation from 2 Samuel 7 and make it a reality. Actually, he was going to make it a reality that wouldn't just meet our expectations, it would go beyond our wildest dreams. It's a reality that's better than what David, Israel, or we could ever imagine. Because God always had and has the bigger picture in mind. And so at the end of the book of 2 Kings, after we read about how the kingdom was captured and taken into exile, in the last few sentences of the book, we're told that the king at the time was still alive. He would go on to be respected by the king of the nation that captured them, and he would eat at his table with him regularly. And so what this means is that there is still hope of a descendant from the Davidic line who would come and be king in the future, who could truly fulfill every promise that God made in 2 Samuel chapter 7. And the prophets during this time of the exile certainly believed that this would be the case. I'm not just making it up. Isaiah chapter 11 verse 1 says that there would be a shoot from the stump of Jesse. If anyone doesn't know, Jesse was the name of David's father. And so from his roots a branch will bear fruit, meaning that a future son of David would restore the lost kingdom from the dead tree stump that was left of it. And it would be a fruitful tree once more. And Jeremiah 23:5 says, "The days are coming, declares the Lord, when I will raise up for David a righteous branch, a king who will reign wisely and do what is just and right in the land." And so for hundreds of years after the ruin of the kingdom of Israel, they waited. Waited, all the while expecting that this king would come. But friends, I have good news for us this morning. Because we actually don't have to wait and wonder when this king will come. Because the perfect king that they're talking about, who meets and surpasses all our expectations, has already come. And his name is Jesus. And this is why we celebrate Christmas. Because Christmas is when we celebrate the birth of the great King Jesus. Around 500 years after the last son of David sat on the throne as king of Israel, a new king would be born. The very first passage of the New Testament in Matthew chapter 1 is a genealogy. It gives a long family tree which leads from Abraham down to David and then all the way down to a man named Joseph, who was to be married to a woman named Mary, who would give birth to a baby boy she would name Jesus. And now have a look at what the angel Gabriel said to Mary when he told her that she will give birth to a son in Luke chapter 1. "Do not be afraid, Mary. You have found favor with God. You will conceive and give birth to a son, and you are to call him Jesus. He will be great, and he will be called the Son of the Most High. The Lord God will give him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over Jacob's descendants forever. His kingdom will never end." Now, hopefully, there are alarm bells going off in your mind right now, because if we go back to our lists, so much of this is directly referencing these promises which we saw in 2 Samuel 7. Matthew 1 showed that Jesus is a son of David, just like the promised king. And in Luke, we hear that he will be great. Tick. He will be called the Son of the Most High. Another tick. And once again, we have a promise that his kingdom will last forever. Not just a long time, and not just until he dies and then his son takes over. This time, it's really this king forever. Because although Jesus did die, he rose to life again, and has been placed at the right hand of the throne of God himself as his perfect king. And that's what Hebrews 12 on the screen tells us, as well as many other places in the New Testament. And so Jesus has his kingdom and his throne that will last forever. And I can further confirm that he most certainly had a father and son relationship with God. Jesus would repeatedly refer to God as his father throughout the Gospels. The verse on the slide gives just one of many possible examples. And we see that even God himself openly spoke and declared that Jesus was my son with whom I love. Now the next point is an interesting one. Now when people compare Jesus with the 2 Samuel 7 prophecy, this is what often can leave them stumped. God promised that the king would do wrong and that when he did, he would punish him, except Jesus never did wrong. Jesus never sinned. And in a sense, isn't that the greatest possible way that God could surpass our expectations? By bringing about a king who wouldn't even need to be punished in the first place? Well, I definitely believe that's true. But also, God did punish Jesus. Except it wasn't because Jesus did anything wrong to deserve it. Not at all. The truth is that God gave Jesus a punishment that we deserved. The perfect King Jesus paid the price and took the punishment that should have gone to his subjects instead. And that's a reality nobody saw coming. Until Jesus, it was the people who had suffered because of the sins of their king. And here, Jesus is a king who suffers because of the sins of the people. And that is what makes Jesus the ultimate king. And it actually leads us to seeing how Jesus fulfills the final remaining promise on the right side. Jesus built a new house for God. A house far better than the one Solomon made, but this time it's not a building. Which definitely isn't what the people were expecting, but in a way it shouldn't have been a surprise because God already told David that he's not really interested in buildings. No, Jesus builds a house for God made of people. This is what 1 Peter 2:5 tells us. You also, like living stones, are being built into a spiritual house to be a holy priesthood, offering spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. And this means something else extraordinary. I don't know if you realize this, because suddenly we have a place in the promises of 2 Samuel chapter 7. The promises made thousands of years ago to King David, as it turned out, were actually about us as well. Because we are the house for God, you and me, the church. Anyone who believes in and follows Jesus as their king, you are a living stone and part of the brickwork in the house that Jesus has built for God. Now that's a reality that surpasses expectations. And guess what? The Bible tells us that the story still isn't over. There's more that God has planned for his kingdom and for his people, because even though the perfect king has come and he has made a way for all people to join this kingdom and become a part of the house of God, if we look around the world today, is it really the kind of place that you would expect that a king who's as perfect as I've told you that Jesus is it really the kind of place that you would expect him to be the king of? With all the injustice and suffering that's still in the world, I don't think so. And so for our last two promises, I'm giving them some question marks. Because in a sense, you know, Jesus has kind of already fulfilled those two. But there is still a final reality that is yet to come. The Bible tells us that one day Jesus will return again and that he will put his kingdom in order. There will be no more suffering, no more injustice, no more death. And so that is what the people of God are waiting for today. We have our perfect king, and we have now an expectation for what his perfect kingdom will be. But we're still waiting for the day that God will make it a full reality, just like he delivered on every other promise we've seen today. And so my question for you this morning is this. Is Jesus your king? And if he is, I hope that the message this morning was a good reminder to you of why you follow Jesus as your king. Why at Christmas we remember that he is the king of all kings. But if you're here today and you're not really sure what it means to follow Jesus as your king, maybe you're just totally confused by everything I've said this morning. And honestly, that's fair enough. We covered a lot of biblical material today. There's a lot of information to take in. But if you hear one thing from me this morning, take away just one thing, let it be this. Get to know King Jesus. Hang around church, ask questions, read the Bible to find out more about him. And Christmas is really a great time of year to learn more about Jesus. He is the kind of king, the only king, who can meet every expectation we can imagine. Or better than that, you know, Jesus far, far exceeds anything that anyone could expect. In fact, I think that sometimes human expectations get in the way of our ability to see what God has planned. Because no one imagined that the promised king would be like Jesus, So many people have sadly missed out on joining in on his perfect kingdom. And that's why it's important to stop and listen to what God himself says about his promised king. Don't just take my word for it, because God tells us everything we need to know himself through his word, the Bible. So my prayer today is that God will continue to show us a reality that surpasses every expectation we have. Let me pray for us to finish. Dear God, this morning we thank you for sending your Son, the perfect King Jesus. We thank you for the way you have carried out your perfect plan which you promised so long ago. Please help us to understand your will and to follow Jesus as the King of our own lives, so that we might be an acceptable house for you. And there is still so much that we don't understand about you and your plans. Help us to continue to grow, to learn, and to want to know more about Jesus. And as Christmas comes closer and closer, please, Father, remind us that all the celebration is really about the day that your promised King came to the world as a baby. Bless us, Lord, I pray. Amen.